And now, coming to you from the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina on Hendersonville Road, it's those two sons of fun, Ken Hankey and Justin Souther, the elitist bastards.
I'm Justin, you're Ken.
Hi there, Justin.
See, that settles that.
Okay. That's under control. We've been to the movies, haven't we?
A lot.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, you saw some rare stuff.
Oh, thank you. I chose, don't forget that.
Yeah, you did choose it, actually.
Which I was thinking today, does that mean I get to choose, right?
Within certain limits, yes.
No, I get to choose whatever I want to watch now. You've basically given me that right. So I can watch Pirates.
I can take it away.
I can watch Pirates.
You can watch Pirates, but I'm reviewing it.
I'm reviewing it. No, I've just picked it.
No,
I picked it just
now.
It's on record. I picked Pirates.
You're watching Blood Moose.
No, I'm doing Pirates.
No. That was a 1 week only. No. No, doesn't work. No. And furthermore, no.
Well, I don't pick Bloodworth then.
Oh, well, you do.
No, I don't.
Yeah, well, you're going to watch it anyway.
What a cruel taskmaster.
I am.
Ken Hankey is.
I am. I've even been called a cunt. That's French with a cedilla.
I have some things to say about decisions. It depends on how much I can think of right now.
Come on. Come on.
Well, it's
the NAMBLA world is waiting to hear what you have to say
Corey
Haim.
Let alone, regardless of his metaphysical state, his days of being a teen heartthrob are well behind him, even before his death.
There are some people who have refused to accept that.
They should watch this movie.
They are usually elderly men.
They should watch this movie and see his bad tattoos and ill-fitting suit and bloated face.
Is he still acting with his mouth hanging open?
I guess.
Don't disappoint me.
Acting is a bit generous.
Well, yes, okay. I mean, there's a whole school of the Corey Haim mouth breather school of acting.
You do get to see him post Cunnilingus. It's classy.
I don't even want to think about this.
Well, now you do.
Oh, God. All right. Anyway, tell us about this exciting... Exciting farewell appearance.
Well, this is a movie that nobody should ever have seen. I understand why it got made, because some people just have too much time on their hands, but it's not really something that should have been
released,
available for public consumption, let alone in an actual movie theater where they show actual movies.
Occasionally.
Yes. But the people that made this managed to convince Carmike and Rave, which is not a Rave theater around here, but
judging by some of the things that Carmike has been bamboozled into running, like See Me Dance,
yes,
and what was that awful inbred hillbilly movie?
It's not Malevolence, was there?
No. This was something worse than that.
It's not Chain Letter.
No, it was worse than that. Anyway, it was an awful inbred hillbilly movie that they got talked into.
Is it the one with the gangsters in it?
Yes.
Yeah, what was that thing called?
I don't remember.
Shiny nickel to whoever can tell us what that was.
Tell us what that movie was. It was the movie that had the website that had breakout quotes from reviews written by the people who made the movie. Classy stuff. Anyway, back to decisions.
So it's really bad. Like, it's substandard for even, like, it's probably the worst of those movies. It's just really bad. Like, I don't know how to, like, it's not even really, like, it's not even, you can't even judge it on a real movie scale. Like, this is not a Hollywood production.
You told me it had a magical crackhead. Now, really.
It does have a magic crackhead in it, which is the highlight of the film. Unfortunately, you have to spend the entire film to get to his big magical crackhead moment.
Oh.
And that is kind of a spoiler. You're not supposed to know he's magical.
Look, how many people were in the theater when you saw it?
Two.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt really awkward watching it with them.
Why? Because you were laughing and they weren't?
No, because it was really bad.
Oh. Okay.
I'm like, why are they still in here watching this? Why haven't they walked out? I thought they walked out about 20 seconds into it, but then I realized they were just changing seats.
Well, maybe it's, you know, they're like those balding middle-aged men wearing raincoats that went to the Olsen Twins movie. I don't know.
That there was a reason for that. There was
yeah,
no reason
I understand
for
that. Well, you don't know.
No, I don't think there was any of that. It's this middle-aged couple that decided that this movie was worth their time.
I still want to know why there was a jar of hand lotion after a screening of The Princess Diaries.
Probably because you can't pick up after yourself, Ken.
Oh, okay. It wasn't me, no.
So you say...
I'm thinking of a word.
I'm sure she's thinking
of it. I used it already. I'm thinking of it without the Cedillo.
Anyway, so it's going... And the only reason this movie's out is because these people thought, hey, we can make a quick buck with our tribute to Corey Haim.
By embarrassing him one last time.
Yes.
Okay.
It's bad. He's bad in it. It's not even, like, you can't even really call it a movie. Like, it's movie-esque. It resembles a movie.
Okay.
It's not good. I don't know, has it gone already?
Look, it will be gone by Friday.
It's a week too long.
It was so bad.
Uh-huh.
How bad was it? I mean, they didn't get anything this week.
Right.
It was so bad, they booked the already played out African Cats to replace it.
Well, when I went to watch it on Friday, I was the first person to have gotten a ticket for it. I doubt it did much better the rest of the weekend. And I feel awful for anybody who sat through it. My heart goes out to them.
As well it should.
Yes.
See, I'm just feeling it was good for your moral character, so I don't have any.
No.
Less.
Is there a plot?
It's about these group of friends who decide to rob a bank. And actually, the one clever thing in the movie is that the bank turns out to actually not have a lot of money in it because it's a credit union. Which is sort of funny, but they don't really do anything with it. But then they end up with this briefcase full of money that was in a safe there.
No sense to me, but that's probably...
And the whole thing is about how everything quickly falls apart after they've robbed this bank, and most of them end up dead except for a couple people.
You mean they made a bad decision?
Yes, except for a couple people who were told that they made the right decision, but I cannot for the life of me figure out what the right decision was.
Not robbing the bank?
No, they did rob the bank.
They did rob the bank.
And he was the guy with the money. Like, he was hiding it from everybody else. So I don't understand what his decision was. Like, they never explained that. Like, basically he gave the money back, but the other people didn't have the money to give back.
Oh, well,
but they all end up dead.
But he ultimately made the right decision by giving the movie back, the money back.
Yes.
But he end up dead too?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. That's the whole point. There is the moral of the story.
But it wasn't, the other people didn't make a bet. They made the same decision. They just didn't have the opportunity to correct it.
Maybe it wasn't thought through.
It's quite possible.
Then let's move on to Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids is an interesting film. It's a comedy, it says, about the usual sort of...
It's about bridesmaids?
Yes, it's about bridesmaids. It's a usual pre-wedding falderal. However, it's really about the jealousy that erupts because Maya Rudolph, who has been Kristen Wiig's best friend since childhood, is starting to pay more attention to a new friend, Rose Byrne, who has influence, beauty, and apparently an endless font of money.
Right.
So it really is all about that jealousy. And here's the funny thing about the movie. I liked it, but I almost never laughed at it. There's a few gags, but for the most part, no. And it's also too long. It's got the Apatow curse of being 125 or 27 minutes long with 90 minutes worth of plot. And every gag is dragged out way beyond its limit. Especially the drunken airplane scene, which not a drunken airplane, it's a drunk scene on an airplane, which was painful to begin with, and then goes on and on and on. And then there's a scene where she tries to attract Chris O'Dowd's attention, who is not speaking to her, and since he's a cop, she decides she will do all sorts of traffic violations in front of him. And this goes on and on and on and on until she finally rear ends him, or runs her car to the rear end of his. Perhaps I should clarify this. And
she sodomizes him.
Yes, with her car.
Yes.
Which would be extremely painful. In any case, the funny thing, like I said, is that I liked the movie because I liked the characters. But what people were finding funny, or were supposed to be finding funny, like her freak out at the wedding shower. I mean, I found it sad and or tragic. I don't find that there's anything intrinsically funny about someone fighting to hang on to a friend they think they're losing to some interloper. I don't find that amusing. So, you know, maybe that's me. I don't know.
There's obviously something wrong with you.
Well, I don't know. I think there was definitely something more wrong with the people sitting in front of us, because the people in front of us not only laughed at nothing, boy, the minute that fade out came, they were out of that theater. So I think we may have liked it better than, because I
stay. As long as you can sleep at night.
I can sleep at night. I can sleep at night. You know, and I like Kristen Wiig. I like Maya Rudolph. I like Rose Byrne. I like Chris O'Dowd. I mean, I think this probably has a lot to do with it.
Right.
I like seeing Jill Clayburgh in her last performance. The only thing about that
she
was...
She come across better than Corey Haim?
Yes. But she looks really frail and thin and unwell. And I think I would have found it. So, I mean, she looked better in Running with Scissors, which should tell you something.
Corey Haim looked like he was bloated and...
Yeah, but who gives a shit about Corey Haim?
The true fans, Ken.
Oh, well, I was never a true fan.
Yeah, obviously not.
No, that's true. I always liked the other Corey better.
Corey, really? I don't know if now you would...
No, probably not. No, I didn't mean it in any sort of
unless you're talking about Corey Hart. They're completely separate. He's not.
I'm thinking of Jeff Corey. No, Wendell Corey. A whole bunch of Coreys. I don't know. Richard Corey. He went home and put a bullet through his head. There you go. There's your literary reference again.
I want you to figure out who your favorite Corey is.
I'll work on that. Probably the coffee pot.
All right. Let's move on to Potiche.
Potiche. It's a film from François Ozon, which, of course, means that it is in French, which means it has subtitles, thereby will be ruled out by the subtitle phobic. It stars... Catherine Deneuve and Gerard Depardieu, and that in itself should be enough to make you want to
see it. Of course he's in it.
Of course he's in it. But the thing about it is that these are
the country of France is obligated.
Shut up. They are not.
For a while. There was a year where I'm pretty sure every...
Probably so,
there's like a decade, I think, actually.
Yes, I do not doubt this. However...
Maybe he was unwell.
He looks
unwell. I'm
worried about him. You were talking about bloated. This man is the size of a house.
Well,
you know, and it's not just like he's grown a stomach or something. I mean, he looks big all over.
Maybe
like,
he ate Corey
like he's
Haim.
Got gigantism or something.
That's what happened to Corey Haim.
But what's funny is that, you know, between the two of them, these are two, you know, these are iconic figures in French film. And they still have the star power and that star quality, regardless of the fact that she's pushing 70 and he's... large. And it's set in 1977. It's kind of a women's lib sort of thing. And being set in 1977 has stylistic advantages because, among other things, we get to see Catherine Deneuve and Gerard Depardieu on a lit disco dance floor, which fortunately they don't try too many fancy moves, which was probably wise. But, I mean, it's fun. It's not going to, you know, set any records or anything. It's going to be just like every other Francois Ozon film that I've seen, which is, I really liked it, and I think I want to go see some more of his movies,
right.
And in a month I will forget that I want to go see more of his films. But right now it's one of the better things that's on screen. I mean, so, and it is good. It's very colorful. It's very fun. I like the fact that it's so obvious from the first scene that it doesn't matter whether their son, who might be the illegitimate half-brother of the sister of the baker's daughter that he's going out with, uh-huh. This is not going to be an issue because the son is so obviously gay. And this becomes made clear over the course of the film without ever being stated. So I mean, it's a nice little picture.
Real quickly, what's the premise of this?
It's a typical French farce. I mean, it's Potiche is a sort of a combined trophy wife status symbol, and that's essentially what Catherine Deneuve's character is and what she's become. And what happens is, through a series of circumstances, she ends up taking over the umbrella company that her husband has been running, that he acquired when he married her. And it turns out she has a much better head for business and is much nicer to the employees and can get much further than he can. And it also puts her back in contact with the local mayor and member of parliament of the Communist Party, which is not unusual for France, and particularly in that era, who is Gérard Depardieu, and they have a past. So, I mean, it's very nice. She ends up running against Depardieu for MP. So it's enjoyable. Light, but enjoyable.
Let's talk about the greatest movie ever sold.
Well, the greatest movie ever sold, I guess, would be described as sort of a meta-documentary. Its premise is that Morgan Spurlock, the man behind Super Size Me, Ken's favorite film of all time,
I loathe Morgan Spurlock,
has decided to make a movie about product placement where the entire thing is funded by product placement. And at the same time, he's going through talking about product placement, about why it exists, how it happens, about advertising. Ken has decided to ignore me.
I'm hearing you. You
just to turn your back on me.
Just a momentary curiosity. Why do you have to look at me in order to?
It's kind of rude. When you next time you start talking, I'll just turn around.
Go ahead, turn around.
No, I'm
talking.
See if
I care. Turn around and talk. Steve will have to run around the bar to follow you.
So the whole thing is about advertising. Like, there's bits about how they research advertising, about how schools are attempting to use advertising and how they're limited to use it to meet their budgets. And the whole thing ends with me having no idea what it's actually about. It's about a lot of things. I don't think it's
about what it's about or what the point is.
What the point is. And even what it's about advertising, but...
And
the more I think about it, just sitting here, it seems like, okay, he came up with this clever premise. Then what do you do with it?
Well,
where do you go with
it? See,
because he takes no stand on anything. It's just information, and it points as too much information. Like, the beginning 10 minutes is just him throwing stuff at you.
Yeah, well,
some of it, I'm sure if you delve into it, isn't accurate. There's stuff at the very beginning that's inaccurate.
Well, it's not like product placement is anything new.
No. And it's not like it's anything, like, it's been around. Like, he talks about how the internet and TiVo has pretty much really brought about product placement. And then
wait a minute. Is that why?
Because TV commercials are obsolete now, because there's other
distractions. So is that why every beer that is hoisted and every sign for beer that you see in altered states is for Miller? And that the internet did that? Or TiVo?
Well, at the same time, the very next scene is a shot of E.T. with Reese's Pieces. Like,
Which they only used because M&M's wouldn't go along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, this has been a thing for a while. This is nothing new.
Which is only a couple or 3 years after Altered right. States, you know, so it's not new. It wasn't new in 1980 when they did it in Altered States.
And the idea, I guess, is to talk about how, like, he gets into a little bit about artistic integrity, like, at what point. But then you talk to people like Brett Ratner.
Who has no artistic integrity or
no.
integrity of any kind.
No.
See, I could never, I'm vaguely curious to see it, but I cannot look at Morgan Spurlock's smirking face without wanting to throw something.
I don't think he'll get much further in this.
Oh, okay.
But
he doesn't eat to a point where he makes himself throw up, does he?
No. He doesn't really do much of anything.
Does he drink enough pomegranate juice that he goes wild and chases people around in a fit of ardor?
No.
No, darn.
No, I did learn that pomegranate juice is 40% as... works 40% as well as Viagra. That's the only thing I've taken from this movie.
At so your age, I'm better. Sure that is an absolutely
well,
worthless
I mean,
piece of information.
One day, you never know.
One day it may be valuable to you.
Turn me into a sexual Tyrannosaurus. Goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
Wow.
You don't know what that's from. You might.
I have no idea, but I was thinking, that's my opening quote.
Okay.
What is that from?
It's from Predator. Jesse Ventura's on the helicopter at the beginning.
Okay.
He's like chewing tobacco. This stuff will turn you into a goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
Okay. I just...
pomegranate juice. That's what they should use.
So it's going to make your arms throb and you're going to run around and try and screw everything that moves.
All right.
Make you extinct.
Make you extinct. There you go.
Your genes will no longer
ultimately,
pass on.
That's a, right. That's probably true.
All your offspring will be birds. That's good to know.
What?
Nothing. I'm just envisioning all your bird-like offspring.
All right, so let's go to Priest.
Priest.
Unless you have more to say about that.
No. It's entertaining. I didn't dislike it. There was never a point where I was bored, but... I spent the entire film trying to figure out what he was trying to say. And I mean, it's fine that he has nothing to say. I would... if that's what he wants
to do.
It's
really not a good base on which to
but it doesn't
found
keep
a documentary.
It keeps it from... I mean, yeah, it's just like, it's okay. It keeps it from actually being something. So... and I don't feel like I ever learned anything, either. I mean, besides, like, a few... like. I learned more about pomegranate juice than anything else.
Oh, okay. Well, that's... but you see, that will be useful to you in 30 years.
And I learned that...
or so.
Most maybe. Companies won't let Quentin Tarantino put their products in his movies. That's why there's so many
well, that's,
made-up stuff.
That's reasonable.
Priest.
Oh, okay.
We're running out of time.
We've both seen it. This is rare.
Yes.
We both seen
so
it.
I watched it by myself, so
he watched it
less.
By himself, which is probably the wrong way to see a fusion of Wild West and vampires. Essentially, what this is
not even good vampires.
Is
though.
No, the vampires,
more like,
except for the vampire with no name, are bad vampires. They're more like indistinct
the creatures
monsters.
From Alien.
Yeah, well, they're not even. They're more like a cross
closer.
Between the creatures from Aliens and the zombies from I Am Legend.
Right.
And they look as cartoonish as that. So, you know, I mean, that's definitely not a selling point. The movie is essentially The Searchers with added vampire action.
Right.
And in that respect, it is so... it is just so screwy that I enjoyed it. But I saw it with people that were snickering at the same things I was snickering at and with whom I could exchange snarky remarks. Justin made the mistake of seeing it by himself.
I thought it was dumb.
And he just thought it was dumb.
It is dumb, though.
It is dumb. I mean, there's no question but that it's dumb. But it's so dumb that it amused me.
Completely incomprehensible to a point. Like,
well, I mean, there are things
the
about
rules
it. No,
this
it's
world.
Not
I can see it's one of these things where...
you can follow the story. The thing is,
no,
it's not incomprehensible.
The world it exists in is incomprehensible.
It is incomprehensible, yes.
And it's something that I can see working perfectly fine in a comic book, but once you put real people in the situation, it becomes quite silly.
Well, I just think it's great that, you know, the priests have these stylish dusters that they wear that have cowls on them. I mean, it's the perfect Wild West attire. It's just, it's amazingly good. I mean, in that respect, and I mean, it's just bizarrely stupid and silly, and you know, that's really all I was expecting, and it amused me, which is something that Legion, the last effort by the exciting team of director Scott Stewart and Paul, where's my career, Bettany, did, you know, and which was just not only stupid, but it was boring. And I did not find this in the least bit boring. Plus,
I found it kind of boring.
I just
did you watch Legion by yourself?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Anyway, I mean, it's not a good movie. I can't recommend it, but it was amusing to me. And it would be amusing to you probably if you took somebody with it who will laugh at all the same crap that you laugh at. Otherwise,
then that's an extra ticket that's being sold, and then they're just going to think to make another one of these stupid things.
Well, that'd be fine if it's as stupid as this one.
It won't be.
No, it probably won't be. But I could hope.
You can hope for another priest movie. You do that.
I can think of things I would rather still not see sequels to than Priest.
Wow.
I can't threaten you with a sequel to Decisions. Let us move on to the Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Okay. Let's. Where is it, Ken? What time?
It's
where?
At 8 o'clock, and it's on... Oh, God. It's on Thursday. Thursday, yes. Which is, in this case, the what? The,
No, it's
the 19th. 15th, May 19th. And it's at 8 o'clock, and it's in the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina.
Yes.
Yes. And this week's exciting feature is...
Invaders from Mars. Not the original Invaders from Mars, but rather the remake... by Tobe Hooper.
Yes.
Best known for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and anyone looking for anything like
it's
Texas
going to be
Chainsaw
sorely
Massacre.
Disappointed. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Sorely disappointed.
It's extremely faithful to the original.
I remember it as such, but bear in mind, I haven't seen it since 1986.
I mean, the basic plot's the same. Kid sees a UFO laying in the backyard. The only one that knows that these aliens, or these Martians rather, they're aliens, but I guess we should be specific, are taking over the brains of adults, and he has to stop them, eventually with the help of the military. And
kind of like Rand cultists.
Yes. So, basic, same structure, but with a much bigger budget. It's that Poltergeist money he's throwing around.
Is that where the budget came from?
It was after Paul.
Yeah, it was after.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you let Spielberg make your movie, then...
Well, yeah, of course, I think the funny thing about that is that supposedly it's directed by him, and, of course, the rumors went around that it was really directed by Spielberg, and it looks more like Spielberg's work for the most part.
Right.
Well, the thing that's funny about it is that, you know, at least back up the person you let put his name on the film. Spielberg never even denied the rumors that he directed it.
No. But for whoever made Poltergeist, I guess we can say Hooper got to make Invaders from Mars. Probably Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. So,
well, I'm certainly glad for the second one.
Yeah.
The first one,
two big budget, very strange. I don't know if I could call Invaders strange. It's sort of odd in a way that anybody would. Like, this is what he wanted to make, and I guess respectful in that.
I remember it fondly.
Right.
So, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it again.
It's not a great movie, but it's entertaining. And it doesn't take itself seriously, and it's full of references and jokes. And you can tell that he likes the original. Like, it's respectful to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know he's got the...
It's not like the Straw Dogs remake that I saw the trailer for.
Oh, dear God, that looks bad.
But it's the good kind of remake. I guess there's two kinds
there
of good remakes.
There are two kinds, yes. Yeah. There's the good kind.
There's one that improves it, and then there's the kind that's just
well, there's,
sort
there's,
of
there's
an
really
homage.
Three. There's improves it, homage, and makes a mess of it. There's three kinds, really.
So, and this would be
homage.
The second. Yes.
Homage.
Yeah. Yes. So if you ever wanted to see Invaders from Mars with a great big budget and the 80s specials of special effects, then
this is it.
This is your chance. Oh, I know, well, the world's been clamoring.
Well, they weren't clamoring in 1986.
No, but
I see
they're ready
now. Okay. Yes. The world has advanced to a point where they're up for Tobe Hooper's Invaders from Mars.
Yes.
All right.
Or maybe not. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
They might hate it. So.
And what are we showing?
We can finally decide if we're the only two people that like this movie.
There you go. And why don't you introduce the when and where of the Asheville Film Society?
Well, it's the same thing as Thursday, but it's on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you don't know what that means, just rewind a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Find where Ken talks about where.
Where and
the
when.
Thursday Horror Picture Show.
But
substitute that for Tuesday.
And make it the 24th instead of the...
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Same thing,
yeah.
It would have been easier just to say...
Yeah, that's true. And remember that this is our special one-year anniversary of the Asheville Film Society. And
Ken will burst out of a cake.
I will not. If you get a cake big enough to put me in it, I'll burst out of the damn thing. I'll tell you that.
Delete the knot out of...
Okay.
I will. Ken Hankey.
Yes, well...
So you learn how to do a Ken Hankey
impression. I will. If you get a cake big enough for me to get inside and burst out of, I will do it. I will be clothed, but I will burst out of the cake.
Okay.
I don't want to frighten the horses. Okay.
We're having horses?
Shh. It's a secret. Okay. In any case, so we're going back to the Coen brothers, which is what we started with. Only this time we are going with the Hudsucker Proxy from 1994.
Which we have found from Miami Steve is his most hated Coen brothers film.
Yeah, well, Miami Steve, you know, likes a bunch of things that he shouldn't like, and so I figure it's only reasonable that he will dislike some things that he should like. So it seems fair to me. It's a wash. So, in any case, this is the Coen brothers attempt at, let's call it a Frank Capra movie, as if made by Preston Sturges. I think that's probably the best description of it. It's, you know, the
flesh
poor,
and the devil.
The Porsche.
It says on there.
Well, that's Garbo. That's a silent Garbo movie. It has no relation to what we're talking about.
I know. The okay. Flesh and the Devil is a pretty good
is it? Yeah. Good title.
Title. Yeah. Anyway. But back. More
yes, you confuse me now. Yeah, it's a typical Capra-esque story of the poor schmuck who comes to the big city and gets fleeced by everybody and betrayed by the girl reporter, and right. It turns out in a weird way to work out for him, especially with the Charles Durning Deus Ex Machina appearance. And it was a film that really... probably just baffled people at the time it came out, not in the least that, you know, it follows Miller's Crossing and the uber-dark Barton Fink, and here's this PG-rated, odd, 1940-style movie set in 1958 and made in 1994. What do you make of this? So, anyway, you should come and see what you make of it. Even Miami Steve should come and see if he likes it better now. Perhaps his taste has improved since he saw it.
Let's talk about the upcomers. What's coming up this week?
We've got Greatest Movie Ever Sold.
And Potiche, both of which we've already reviewed. And then there's Bloodworth.
Right.
Which
another
Justin,
country music.
Justin wants to review that.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't.
You do. You
I'm reviewing know. Pirates anyway.
No, you may be.
I want to review Bloodworth, but I'm reviewing Pirates.
Yeah, well, whatever.
I feel like that's
It's one of the... Movie. Bloodworth is the only thing... else is coming out. And of course, nothing mainstream is coming out because nothing is stupid enough to go up against Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, which has gotten... I find the reviews to be very interesting. I don't trust reviews of sequels to big blockbusters because there's always a tendency for certain critics to go in predisposed to hate it because, it's the fourth film in the series, it's going to suck. And they go in with that attitude, and they come out with hating the movie.
Nobody liked the other two sequels. Like,
no, the second one was pretty well liked. It was the third one that wasn't well liked, and it still made a fortune. I don't think this is going to be any different in that regard. I find it very interesting that the British and Australian reviews have been really, mostly violently negative. And I more and
were
more have...
annoyed that Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom aren't to
that
be
may
found.
Be, but the whole thing about it is,
their
is
sense
that
of
I have actually started to realize that I have very little in common with Australian and British reviewers, though. And I'm not sure what that is.
You're a tried and true American.
It must be so. Which
flag waving, Walmart shopping, gun rack owning American.
I do not own a gun rack. So I don't know what it is.
I was at a Wayne's World quote, but I can't remember it all.
Thank God. It's embarrassing enough that you can remember part of a Wayne's World quote. I've
well,
had
he
enough
gets,
of it.
He, gets,
enough
he of gets a gun rack for his birthday. The crazy girl gives him a gun rack. Anyway.
Have you had enough? I've had enough
of
this.
We're done.
I think we're done for this week.
I'm Justin. This is Ken. We're Elitist Bastards. We've been to the movies. We'll continue going to the movies till
somebody stops us. And and we are brought to you through the kind benevolence of the Mountain Express.
And the internet.
And the internet. And we are produced, cohered, and otherwise put up with by Miami Steve, the Colonel Shanafelt. Didn't he get a new name last week? Did he get an additional name? Did he get a new name? What was that?
Jeremy called me the Crocodile Hunter.
Oh, yes. He's also a Crocodile Hunter.
Which we're pretty sure is a euphemism.
We believe so, yes. Either that or there's a manta ray with his name on it.